My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Welcome back. I hope you're doing all right. I hope all is good in your world. Thank you, by the way, for your messages over the last 2 or 3 weeks since the podcast returned. Really appreciated. Also, thank you for your reviews as well. Podcasts do tend to live and die on reviews, so thank you so much for them. If you are listening now and you're a regular listener, feel free to drop me a little review, especially if you're listening on the Apple Podcasts app. They love a review. They really do live for it on that platform. They can't get enough of it. So if you have left one, if you're going to leave one, then thank you very much in advance. Also, if you really love the show too, you can get more episodes. An extra episode comes out every week over on Patreon. It's £5 a month. So what's that, like $7.50, I think? And thank you if you've signed up recently. Let's do some more name checks for people that have joined us over on the Patreon feed. Hello, Stephen Boyle. Hi to Mark Suges. Hi to Matthias Jensen. Hi to Patrick Otter Dahl. Hi to John Schofield. Hi to Hal Marcus. Hi to Brendan Agger. Hi to Pascal Zuta. And hi to Richard McGee as well. You can join those people over on Patreon. The link is in the episode's description. Some good episodes have gone up recently, actually. We had a little look at Lovesick in depth the other day because, well, it was the first song on Time Out of Mind, wasn't it? So for me, it was the kind of first introduction we had to a brand new era of Dylan's work, and it was to be one of his best eras, and it still continues to be one of his best eras. So we looked at Lovesick and how that was obviously, as I say, the first song of that new era, but also it really defines that era in that it's quite daring sonically, it's interesting, it really is an artist recapturing their creative rush, if you like. I just find that song fascinating, and I find the whole Time Out of Mind album fascinating too. So we did an episode on that over on Patreon recently. Also, some interviews have gone up too with various brilliant Dylan speakers, including Dara Carville, who many people will know his work in the UK especially. He's a playwright and screenwriter. He wrote an ITV series called The Bay, which was a big hit in the UK, and continues to be a big hit as well. I spoke to him about Dylan, and it was great to speak to him really, because he not only spoke so well and so eloquently about Bob's work with a real passion, but also as someone who is a great writer themselves and someone who is a professional writer, he really has like a keen ear to break down Dylan's lyrics. So it was great to speak to him about that and get kind of a professional's point of view on the words that Dylan writes. And that episode, that chat with Dara, will be available in the next 24 hours or so. So if you're on Patreon, keep a lookout on your feed. But as I say, loads more episodes on there. In fact, it's around about 50 at the moment. As I say, including a look at Lovesick and more recently, a look at Simple Twist of Fate. And also an episode I really enjoyed doing, which was all about Dylan's first ever recorded song. We go right back to the start of his career. As I say, all available on Patreon right now. And if you stick around to the end of this episode, you can listen to a little clip of a recent episode. And the link to that is in this episode's description as well. Also, stick around to the end of this episode to find out where we go next. It's going to be another not so good record, although it's not as bad. It's nowhere near as bad as Down in the Groove. We'll get to that next week, and as I say, you can find out where we're going at the end of this episode. This episode, though, is all about a album that comes at the end of the 60s for Bob, a really good record, but I'd say not a classic. It's an interesting record to look at, though, because it really is Dylan in full change, I think, and we'll get to what exactly I mean by that at some point in this episode. Let's have a look at it, shall we? This is 1969's Nashville Skyline.
One more night, the stars are in sight, but tonight I'm as lonesome as can be. Oh, the moon is shining bright, lighting everything in sight, but tonight no light will shine on me.
Nashville Skyline has always felt like an important album. It was a million seller in the US for a start. It produced one of Dylan's biggest selling singles as well. It was the moment he went country and the moment he changed his voice almost completely. He'd moved in his personal life too. He'd moved houses right before the album. This was after fans had plagued his previous Woodstock home. The Dillons had gone to a secluded mansion on Ohio Mountain Road, the other side of Woodstock. In the previous house in the master bedroom, they'd left a huge brass bed. Lay across my big brass bed. But more on that later. Despite being an album of change and alteration, this LP never reached the top of Dylan's mountain for me. And there's a very good reason for that. And it's one we'll see develop over this record's brief tracks. Crucially though, it was the end of the 60s, a decade that Dylan had roared like a king. He finished it with a carefree record that manages to have a weight to it, but also a lightness of touch. It comes after the more intense affair of John Wesley Harding and is, of course, the last album before the career grenade of Self-Portraits. And it segues between those two records perfectly. Whilst the Beatles were expanding the world's mind with Sgt. Pepper's, Dylan was stripping things back with John Wesley Harding. Here, in a similar move, a politicised world, having just witnessed the assassinations of both Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and a general election in the face of the Vietnam War, Dylan pretty much stays away from politics. Instead, he makes a domestic country record. In fact, it couldn't be further from those political scenes. This is the sort of album that feels like it's stuck in an eternal mid-afternoon as the sun starts to get heavy and the moonshine makes everything a little hazy. That is where Nashville Skyline lives. It's the sort of album to be played whilst lying in a hot field as the day passes very slowly. While Dylan had been in this mode for a while now after that infamous motorcycle crash, and we see him continue it onto 1970's New Morning and, to a lesser extent, onto Self-Portrait, it feels even more real here with this album's country sonics. They really help to heighten those words and the feeling found on these tracks. But it also does make the album, at times, a little throwaway. Now, let me be clear, there's no bad songs on here. But there are some songs that feel like they are just Dylan doing a country track to fit in with the rest of the album. Just like old saxophone Joe, when he's got the whole tit up on his toes. Oh, me, oh, my. Love that country pie. This track, Country Pie, comes in the third Nashville Skyline session on the 14th of February 1969. It's a bit of fun. I mean, at one point he literally starts naming flavours of pie. What do I care? Blueberry, apple, cherry, pumpkin, and plum. Call me for dinner, honey, I'll be there. But like we saw, or rather didn't see, with Down in the Groove, sometimes it's nice to just have a bit of fun on a record. I'd rather have this than a half-baked serious song, like we did find on Down in the Groove. Of course, the majority of critics don't like this song, which is no surprise. And while I don't think any of us reach for the Nashville Skyline LP to throw on a bit of Country Pie, it's a nice little 1 minute and 39 seconds towards the end of the record that we don't really need, but might as well have. There's a nice little picture painted in the song. There's a picture painted of music being played from a fiddler and a character called Saxophone Joe. There's drinking going on too, of course. In the final verse, Dylan sings, "Shake me up that old peach tree. A little Jack Horner got nothing on me. Oh me, oh my, love that country pie." Jack Horner is, of course, from a nursery rhyme, which is an idea that Dylan would return to with varying degrees of success on a later album. The original rhyme here is "Little Jack Horner sat in a corner eating a Christmas pie. He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, 'What a good boy am I.'" And look, we might have wasted the last 30 seconds of this podcast talking about a song which is only three times the length of that, and it really doesn't warrant a second's more thought. But that's kind of what is great about Nashville Skyline. There's not really too much going on here apart from the obvious highs to get too excited about, but, you know, it's a breezy album to pass the time with. It makes sense in its intended context. It's fun. It's a little light-hearted. You don't have to think about it too much. Away from that, though, of course, that does make this album a little more problematic. When you listen to this after John Wesley Harding or Blonde on Blonde, of course, it struggles to compete. Why wouldn't it? I said in the last episode of this podcast that some consider this album a classic, and while it has some classic moments, I'm not sure the whole album is in classic territory, and I think a lot would agree with me. But in a moment that we don't really see on Bob's records, it works well as a passive listen. Dylan is not a passive artist by any stretch of the imagination. You usually have to sit up and listen to his songs and pay attention during them before you miss something, mainly because he makes them so curious. But here, these songs, they're a much more gentle affair. The song Peggy Day comes in the same session as Country Pie, and once again, despite some critical blasts from almost every corner of the music press, it's really fine, I guess. There's some nice dobro guitar work from Norman Blake, and this is aided by Bob Wilson's piano. We even have a, well, showbiz finish to a song.
Peggy Day stole my poor heart away. By golly, what more can I say? Love to spend a night with Peggy Day. Love to
The musicians listed on the studio log are Bob Dylan on vocal, guitar and harmonica, obviously, Bob Wilson on piano, Charlie Daniels on guitar, Charlie McCoy on bass, Norman Blake on guitar, Kenneth Buttrey on drums and Peter Drake on steel guitar. Bob Johnston is back as producer here and on the whole record too. After convincing Dylan and his team that Nashville should be the home for Bob with the Blonde on Blonde LP, Dylan had stuck around. This is mainly due to that big payoff from Johnston's gamble. New York as a creative home had run out of steam for Dylan during the sessions for that classic double album. And with Dylan's new post-crash lifestyle, Nashville seemed like a good place for him to stay and hang around. Let's not forget too that the John Wesley Harding album had paid off as well. And with this new country direction, there was surely nowhere else to cut the record apart from that city. Another song captured in that third session is Tell Me It Isn't True. Here Dylan glides through some country folk, which sounds like it could have been a bonus track on the George Harrison album All Things Must Pass.
I have heard rumors all over town. They say that you're planning to put me down.
Dylan croons his way through the song in that country voice he's suddenly adopted. It's a classic woman done me wrong type song, as Bob sings, all of those awful things that I have heard, I don't want to believe them, all I want is your word. So darling, you better come through, tell me that it isn't true. This song is a good illustration of the whole Nashville Skyline LP. While it is labelled, packaged and branded as a country record where Dylan even sings in that country croon, deliberately. And, of course, a country legend appears on it and Bob is on the front cover looking like he's at a, I don't know, agricultural event for American farmers. This is not actually really a wholehearted country record, despite all of that. I mean, it's a country record, of course, with a heavy dose of lots of other things, like folk, for example, if we're going to be picky about genres. There was some backlash against this country record when it first was released, and I can sort of see why. It's not wholly a country record. The famous music reviewer Robert Christgau said that Dylan had toyed with the public's expectations in presenting a country record that wasn't really a complete country record. But then again, Bob's always loved misdirection in almost every form, and he didn't actually explicitly come out and say that he was making a country album. Indeed, he still hasn't, really. So we can take it for what it is. It's an LP that has a heavy country flavour, and the country purists can just sleep easy. Of course, these days, the country genre has shifted so much, the issue, as most in time, has died out, apart from the smallest corners of the internet. Away from that, what this move into these types of Sonics did do is make an easy marketable record for Bob. And while the follow-up to the all-encompassing Blonde on Blondes, John Wesley Harding, did a good job of keeping the Bob Dylan freight train moving at full steam ahead, it didn't raise the bar like he had been doing in almost every release previously. Bringing It All Back Home, Highway 61 and Blonde on Blonde were albums on the same trajectory. It was like a jet plane was taking off. He kept going higher and higher and higher. There seemed to be no ceiling to his work. But John Wesley Harding inevitably was a levelling off, shall we say. But Nashville Skyline did raise the bar a little. Perhaps not in terms of the quality of songs, but in terms of it being a big commercial success. In fact, it would prove to be one of Dylan's biggest commercial successes. It came just at the right time too. With what we know was to come in the years directly after this, it's a good job that Dylan did have a big seller for his career. He would definitely benefit from the units sold with this record in the long run. Part of the success, as I say, is that it's an easy album to market. Dylan's country record is an easy point to get across. It's a genre record for a start. We know what to expect and he delivers it for us. Also, it's a new genre for him. Country fans might have decided to check out Bob Dylan due to the curiosity of him making a country-like album, giving him penetration into a new fan base. But most crucially of all, this album has a big hit single.
His clothes are dirty, but his hands are clean. And you're the best thing that he's ever seen. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while.
Lay, Lady, Lay is one of the brightest stars in Bob's sky of hits. And you know what? All said and done, Bob really isn't actually a massive singles artist. Not that he can't write a good single, of course. He's not one of the artists that's never cracked the top 40. Obviously, he has. In fact, quite the opposite when you look at the songs that others have covered. In fact, a good part of his career and fortune is down to top 40 successes that others have had on his behalf with songs from the early part of his recording days. But as a solo artist, he doesn't have too many huge smash hit singles. He didn't have a number one single in the Billboard charts for a long, long time. In fact, until 2020. It's the one thing he lacks when we look at him compared to his contemporaries. For example, McCartney has a bigger hit single canon than Bob. Even Springsteen could give Bob a run for his money when it comes to hit singles. But for me, Dylan trumps everyone as an artist, especially when it comes to albums. Lay, Lady, Lay is a big hit, though. Bob suggested in a 1971 conversation that he wrote the song with Barbara Streisand in mind, although this feels like it might be a Bob joke. The song itself comes in that third Nashville Skyline session. In fact, it's the last thing they record. They had given it four goes before this one and had also given it four goes on the previous session on the 13th of February too. Here, though, they finally get it, and it comes partly by chance. Apparently, after drummer Kenny Buttery asked Bob what he heard in his head for the drum part, Dylan replied with one word, and that word was bongos. Johnston also suggested a cowbell, which further confused the drummer. In the end, he found a beat-up cowbell and a pair of bongos, and he lit a cigarette lighter under the skin to tighten it to get a tone. Chris Christopherson, who was working as a janitor at the studio, was enlisted to hold the bongos and cowbell next to the drum kit during the take. It turned out to be one of the best performances on a Dylan record ever. Let's bring it up a little bit in the mix to fully appreciate it. The good performances don't stop with the drums. Pete Drake's steel guitar is an absolute joy on this song. Here he is playing it live a few years later, isolated.
Lay, lady, lay. That's the old Bob Dylan thing.
His performance is so good, it ends up catching the ear of George Harrison, and Drake goes to England to work on the aforementioned All Things Must Pass album. No surprise, both albums share Sonics given this, and of course benefit from Dylan's involvement too. In the middle of all of this is Bob's vocal, and it's another good performance. His voice is like a crooner here, and it feels like the origins of what he would present to us in the form of albums like Triplicate and Shadows in the Night all those decades later. The vocal was done in one take, in classic Bob style. He sounds almost unlike any other time we hear him. Gone is the electric delivery he gave us on Subterranean Homesick Blues, and gone is the poetic singing of Desolation Row, and gone is the bright-eyed personality voice of Blowing in the Wind. Here we have a technically great performance from Bob. He, in this moment, is a true pop star.
Lay, 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 lay. Play across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while.
Dylan's label boss and CBS vice president Clive Davis realized Bob had recorded a classic with this song. He insisted it should be a single. Dylan wasn't so keen. He's quoted as saying, "I begged and pleaded with him not to." Dylan apparently never felt close to the song, or thought it wasn't representative of his work as a whole. But Davis knew a hit when he heard one, and that's exactly what it became. Dylan closed his breathtaking decade with a big hit. It stayed in the top 40 for 11 weeks in the summer of 1969.
Stay with your man a while.
That performance from Dylan on Lay Lady Lay isn't too far away from the sort of thing that his idols had been giving us for years. It's a sort of professional yet charismatic performance of Elvis or Johnny Cash, the later of which is also on the record in the form of a re-recorded Girl from the North Country.
See for me that her hair's hanging down. It curls and falls all down her breast.
This is a ragged version of one of Dylan's early classics, and surprisingly is the song they open the album with. While for me it's in no way the best album opener, as we've seen, Dylan is pretty good at sequencing his albums. So perhaps this was a way to bring some authenticity to this country-sounding album. I mean, short of Dolly Parton, there's not really a bigger country superstar to have at the start of your country-sounding album to really start a precedent, shall we say. Bob even broke with his dislike of television to appear on Johnny's show in the May of 1969. Johnny had said that his new ABC television show could be a success or fail completely. If we get Bob, it will be a success, he said. They did, and it was. But it wasn't all plain sailing for Dylan. Bob was very nervous about that, said the show's musical director Bill Walker. He was very nervous because, well, the show was live. Yes, that's right. Unusually, the show was completely live. Dylan, who was out of sorts when it came to performing post-motorcycle crash, looks every bit how Walker described him when you watch the show back. But it shows Bob's affection for Cash. He's willing to do that for his idol. As for how the Nashville Skyline recording between the two came about, well, it was chance or fate. On the 19th of February, the day of the fifth Nashville Skyline session, Cash was recording in the same studio as Bob, working on his own album. On the spur of the moment, the friends decided to record together. Johnston, having worked extensively with both artists, became the facilitator. He says they looked at each other and they just got their guitars out and started playing. They recorded approximately 18 songs using members of Cash's band. Apparently, after about 2 hours, Dylan said, "That's all of it, no more." Girl from the North Country was the only song officially released on the album, but of course we get a more complete picture of those sessions years later with the Travelling Through box set. Cash was only a couple of days into recording his pretty successful album, Hello, I'm Johnny Cash, which would come out in 1970. The song, though, Girl from the North Country, is sort of symptomatic for a lot of the album. While we do have highs, and big highs at that on this record, there's some, not so much lows, but unremarkable moments. The song Nashville Skyline Rag is fine. It feels like it's a sister song to many on the Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid soundtrack. It's a little instrumental fling that features some fun, if not particularly exceptional, sonics. The track that follows this on the album is To Be Alone With You, which features the now famous moment where Dylan utters, "Is it rolling, Bob?" to his producer. This happens at the start of a song and is possibly the most famous bit from the entire track, which is a concerning state of affairs for the tune's reputation. Not that this is a bad song, it's just a good example of an issue with Nashville Skyline, in fact the main issue, that these are unremarkable tracks for the most part. And sure, from another artist we might enjoy this more, because when it comes to Dylan, especially Dylan in the 60s, we expect the entire universe from Bob in just four verses and three choruses. Unsurprisingly, he can't deliver that to us all the time. Even Bob in his prime can't do that. What we do get, though, is a nice song. It's a little country rock tune. It's one of four songs that Bob had written for the album before the recording sessions, the others being Lay Lady Lay, I Threw It All Away, and One More Night. It's the first song they recorded for the records, and it comes in the album's second session. While the first session had proved to be completely fruitless, in the second they get this track, and they get it on the fourth attempt. They give it eight attempts in all, but the fourth one seems to have been satisfactory to make it onto the album. Alongside One More Night, in this session they also get the track I Threw It All Away. This for me is one of the album's better songs. In fact, while I wouldn't call it a classic, unlike Lay Lady Lay or perhaps even Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You, it is probably just a step behind those two songs in terms of my affection for the tracks on this record. I like its old-time folky riff that happens at the start and the din of the organ, and I mean din in a good way. Bob's country croon is even more country and even more croony than elsewhere. His performance in this song is wonderful. It's intimate, and he talks of being a fool and letting love slip through his hands. We get some lyrics that are very in keeping with the rest of this era, as Bob sings, "Love is all there is, it makes the world go round. Love and only love, it can't be denied. No matter what you think about it, you just won't be able to do without it. Take a tip from one who's tried."
Love is all there is, it makes the world go round. Love and only love, it can't be denied. No matter what you think about it, you just won't be able to do without it. Take a tip from one who's tried.
At only 2 minutes and 26 seconds, it, like elsewhere, is pretty short, but pretty sweet. Even more sweet is Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You. We end the album on the sort of vibe that would be picked up on 1970s New Morning. In fact, I've done an extra episode of this podcast on how Dylan likes to end his albums. There's a fair amount of foreshadowing going on the many final tracks of his records. Bob's quite good at concluding an album and moving on to the next with his songs, and this is another good example of him doing that. Dylan is happy and chilled, and of course, in love. "You cast your spell and I went under," he sings as the Nashville Cats blast through some country blues. We also get a pretty good melody too. I love that hook that we get on the lines of, "If there's a poor boy on the street, let him have my seat, 'cause tonight I'll be staying here with you."
I see that station master too. If there's a poor boy on the street, then let him have my seat, 'cause tonight I'll be staying here with you.
While they attempt this song 11 times in the album's fourth session, they get it halfway through, and it's a good take too. Although, having said that, we've seen with at least two of these songs where they get the song that ends up on the album halfway through, but they still keep going with it, like they're looking for something more, but they don't discover it. And I guess that's quite representative of the Nashville Skyline album as a whole. It's good, but perhaps it's not perfect. By the time the final song finishes, you feel happy and content as a listener. Bob finishes a very long decade. He'd redefined what a pop song could be. He'd changed the way we'd think about lyrics forever. And he himself had changed so many times too. He says goodbye to all of that, perhaps fittingly with possibly his most accessible album of that era. This record doesn't induce as much chin-scratching as almost every other Bob album at this point. It is the sound, though, of an artist taking it a little easy on himself. This album isn't trying to conquer the world, nor is it trying to make it better. It is just an album. There's some magic scattered through its DNA, but ultimately it's not undefiningly, world-shatteringly brilliant. Come 1969, the times were changing for Bob. And to give him his due, despite the desire of his fans and possibly his bank manager at the time, Bob went to do something different once again. He didn't revert to what he had done before. Also, you feel for Dylan, the man, and for the sake of his career, he'd have to make albums like this. They can't all be incredibly intense or uber era-defining. That's just not sustainable. Bob's always moved with change, and whilst Nashville Skyline might not be the best album of the 60s, it did keep Dylan moving forwards. And that's something that has really gone on to define his career.
Throw my ticket out the window. Throw my suitcase out there too. I don't need them anymore. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you.
That is it for this episode. As always, share your thoughts on it and the album discussed. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bob Dylan Podcast. I'm on both as well, personally at Ben Burrell and Benjamin Burrell on Instagram. Share your thoughts on Nashville Skyline. What do you make of it? Let me know, please. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you would have heard this episode already, but a few weeks ago now, in fact, was it a couple of months ago? A couple of months back, I think. I had the joy of speaking to Kevin Odegaard, who was one of the players on Blood on the Tracks. He gave us a fascinating insight to that, those kind of second round of sessions, if you like, for Blood on the Tracks, because obviously they recorded some in New York, and then you know, famously Dylan re-recorded some tracks, didn't he? Kevin Odegaard was in those second sessions, and he spoke so openly and honestly about his time there. It was really fascinating to hear from him, and he was not only a great storyteller, but kind of approached the whole thing with a really clear head, and it was great to hear that. There was no kind of bitterness from him. He just gave us, you know, exactly the situation as he saw it, and he was great to speak to, actually. It was a fascinating chat. It's one of my favourite interviews I think I've ever done. That is available on Patreon right now, and here's a little clip of me chatting to Kevin Odegaard.
Chris learned Tangled Up in Blue. He learned it in G, the key of G, and he came out and taught it to the band, and we ran it down with Bob, and it was just fine. And then Bob turned on his heel and looked me right between the eyes and said, "Well, what did you think?" And I forgot who I was with, and I forgot my place in the room in life. And I said, "Well, it's passable." It's okay, it's passable. And Bob said, "Passable?" And so I was sweating through my clothes by this time. It happens fast. And I suggested we move it up into the key of A to give it more bite, more urgency. And so Bob would kind of reach for the notes a little bit more than he was. A is a great, like, rockabilly key, and it really spits out at you. Every key has a personality. This much I know. I'm not Segovia, but I know that each key comes from a different place in the world, and they all have very well-defined personalities. And that A bites like a, and it cuts like a knife.
I mean, I'm no music expert, but I'm pretty sure that Tangled Up in Blue remained in the key of A. So you altered history there.
The whole interview with Kevin Odegaard is available for Patreon subscribers right now. Click the link in the episode's description if you want to hear more. Next week on the main podcast, another album, of course, another album awaits us. Where are we going next week? Well, we're going to the 90s and we're going to Good As I've Been to You, which, you know, it's not the most fascinating album of Dylan's career, but there is quite a lot to say about it. So join me next week for that. I will see you back here for Good As I've Been to You. In the meantime, thank you as always for listening. I look forward to chatting to you further about Nashville Skyline, and I'll see you down the road.